The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. I'm Jonas, and this is episode 7 of our Legends Masterclass series. And from one John to another John.
Hello,
Johnny John. Saint, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a lovely journey up, a beautiful part of the world here in Rhyl. And you're right on the coast. When did you decide to move so far away from Manchester, Johnny?
You're asking the memory man now. Oh, I've been here about 30 years. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Manchester, you know, but it just, I remember coming here when I was a child with my parents for the holidays, and I always loved the place. But then my dad moved down here years and years ago, and he bought a business down here, and so I came and lived here, and I've just loved it ever since. You know, I'm so close to the coast.
Yeah, that's it. Well, during when the summer's out, when the sun's out, you can take a walk down to the beach anytime.
Absolutely.
And there
Absolutely.
We go. But of course,
it does get a bit crazy in winter.
A bit bracing.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yes.
But it's lovely speaking to you. And we spoke a little bit before we hit the record button about my previous guests, Marty Jones and Tony St. Clair,
yes.
And Mal Sanders and one or two others. And you're still quite close to Marty, aren't you? You see him on a regular basis?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I go over to Manchester fairly frequently, actually, and yes, have a night out with him and a couple of beers, you know.
I've also seen you in the ring training some of his boys as well, you know, getting them under the Johnny Saint learning tree.
Yeah.
How's that? Nice to still be quite active and part of the business?
Yes, it is, actually, although I am restricted because I've got a false knee now.
Yeah.
Which does restrict me. I can't get on the deck and pull around properly, but I can show them stuff.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're still in fine physical form, if you don't mind me saying. You keep yourself busy and fairly fit. What do you do to kind of keep yourself active and in shape nowadays then, Johnny?
Well, I have my own little gymnasium here with my own weights. You know, I don't use heavy weights, only light weights, but lots of reps.
Right.
I do lots of squats and press-ups and things like that. And
Yeah. Yeah, and tell us a little bit about, I mean, are you involved in the wrestling scene in any other ways? Do you ever get invited to do seminars, or do you go to the reunions, Johnny?
Well, I go to the reunions as many times as I can, yes. As I'm getting a bit older, I don't like particularly driving too far these days. Not on the roads, the roads are so crowded these days.
Yeah.
So I tend to stick to like Birmingham or Leeds, or that's as far as I want to travel these days, really.
And we mentioned Marty a moment ago. Are there any of the other boys you keep in touch with nowadays, Johnny?
Not really. Unfortunately, because I'm not knocking where I live, but I am a little bit out of the way here.
Yeah.
You know, the action always seems to be around the cities. And so I'm a little bit isolated here. So if I want to see anybody, I've got to do the travelling.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah. But there is the occasional reunion, northern reunion, isn't there, where you get to kind of meet up with some of your old pals and reminisce, tell some stories.
Yeah, there's the Leeds reunion, which is every year, and that's a great one because a lot of the London lads come up. And, of course, and I'm meeting guys I've never met before
that
come into the business. You know, but watch old television films and come up and introduce themselves and ask you questions. And so it keeps you busy.
Absolutely. And going back in time a bit, Johnny, were you an academic child or were you more sporty? What was you like growing up?
First of all, let me ask you what you mean by academic.
Well, I'm guessing you went to school.
No, I listen.
That's a story for another time.
That's a story. I was a bit of a dunce, actually. The teachers always used to put me at the back of the class, out of the way. Maths, I hate it. Once I got past 10 fingers and 10 toes, I was shattered. But I was good at English and I was good at art and I was good at joinery and metalwork.
Right, more creative.
More creative.
Yeah.
But where I excelled was in the gym.
Yeah.
Or on the track.
Yeah. Know. Yeah. And were you a fan of professional wrestling or boxing? What sort of sports were you a fan of growing up? And when did wrestling first come into your kind of consciousness?
Well, I was a boxing fan, actually, because I did a little bit of amateur boxing. In fact, I was National Association of Boys Clubs Lancashire champion boxing.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the early 50s. I can't remember the dates now. But then, you see, hey, my memory is going again now. Then I got taken to a gym one day down in, well, it wasn't a gym, actually. It was just somebody's front room where they had a mat on the floor.
Yeah.
And they asked me to get on the mat, and I got on the mat. And because I was a young, fit lad,
yeah,
although I didn't know the wrestling, I could give them a good scene to, you
yeah.
know. And it progressed from there. There was one or two guys stood around in suits and I didn't know who they were. And one of the guys came up to me and asked me, have you ever thought of turning professional? And it sort of, well, you know. And
How old would you have been then? Maybe 17, 18 years old?
I was about, yeah, it would be 16 and a half, 17, yeah. I think I turned professional when I was 18.
Right. When did you first come across Billy Robinson, or when did Billy Robinson first come into your life?
Well, he came into my life when I was about 15 years old. I lived in Belgrave Road, New Moston, Manchester. And four doors away, on the opposite side of the street, was a corner shop, and it was a ladies' hairdressing salon.
Ah.
And my mother used to go there and have her hair done. And, of course, mothers get talking, don't they? And, you know, that's how we met.
Yeah, and Billy was renowned as more of a catch or a shoot style wrestler, wasn't he? Kind of proper grappling.
Oh yes.
What was the training like with Billy? Because this is probably before you turned pro. Did you find the training easy? That sort of style?
Oh no, not with Billy.
It's hard day at work.
Oh,
yeah?
It was hard, really hard. Billy would really put you through the paces. Definitely.
Yeah. And you mentioned getting spotted and being asked to turn pro by these gentlemen in suits.
Yes, right.
Was that in Wigan by any chance?
No, it was somewhere in Manchester, actually. It was a gymnasium in Manchester. And I can't remember. I think it was in Moss Side in Manchester.
Yeah.
It wasn't a proper gymnasium. It was just a room in a house where they got a mat on the floor.
Yeah.
And I got taken down there by an old friend of mine who was already in the business, and I got put onto the mat with guys I'd never seen before, and I must have held my own,
yeah,
or impressed them, and there was one or two guys stood around in suits and who I later learned were promoters, and one of these guys came up to me and said, "Have you ever thought of turning pro?"
And had you?
Well,
up
to that point, no, I'd never thought about it, but it sort of struck me like somebody hitting me on the head with a hammer. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. And so you're 18 when you turn pro.
Yes.
You had your debut match. Were you smartened up to the business for your debut? Did you know that it was more of a performance as opposed to a real-life fight? Because obviously with your training with Billy,
yeah,
he's a proper grappler, a proper catch shooter.
Yeah.
When did the performance aspect of professional wrestling come into it for you? And was it a bit of a surprise?
Quite a bit of a surprise, actually, I can assure you. I got stuck in. Originally, to you know, my first few matches, I got stuck in, and it was like, whoa, you know, I don't want that. I don't want to go on with him again. And I learned slowly that you need to be. It's not just a question of being good at wrestling.
Mm.
You've got to be. You've got to sell yourself as well.
Yeah.
To the general public, you know.
Yeah. So I'm guessing when you started your career, your professional career, you was more northern-based, maybe around the Manchester area. When did you start branching out, maybe further afield or wrestling down south, Johnny? Was that soon after?
Now then, you're asking the memory man again. Here we go. I remember, that was it, yes, I remember now. I worked mainly in the north here because they'd never heard of me down south. But one day I got a telephone call off somebody, I can't remember who it was. Somebody had been injured and they wanted a substitute for him down in, I think it was London I had to go. And would I be prepared to go and do it? And so I said, yes, I'll do it. So I jumped in my car and I drove to London, went to the hall. And I must have impressed people.
Yeah.
Because the next thing I know, I'm working for Del Martin Promotions in London.
Yeah, there you go. And it all kind of developed very quickly and things kind of started moving at a bit of a pace for you. What do you remember about Tony Childs? Because I think he was fairly important to your career early on, wasn't he, Johnny? Yeah, and a bit of a factor in your learning and a bit of an inspiration to you. What can you tell us about Tony Childs?
Tony, what a fella. What a fabulous fella. Fabulous, fantastic wrestler. And I wrestled him a few times. There was a difference in weight, you know. But he'd show you stuff and I can't praise the guy enough, honestly. It really set me on the road to my success.
And would you say that he was one of the guys that was important in kind of making sense of the business to you in terms of maybe some light bulb moments or maybe just helping you to understand the world of the professional business?
He helped me to understand the world of professional wrestling. It's no good just going in there and being a good wrestler. Mm. You've got to sell your personality. You know, you've got to make yourself, I don't know.
Stand out.
Yeah. So, yeah. And he told me all this.
So, you made your pro debut at about 18 years old.
Yes. Like
I say, got under the wing of Tony Charles, started wrestling a bit more down south.
Yes.
When did the bookings start to pick up for you? When did it get a little bit more consistent for you? Do you remember that? And you mentioned Dale Martins. Would it have been around that time?
I got a phone call one day. I can't remember who it was from now. Would I go down to... Because they used to have a gym, you see, in Dale Martins had a gym in Brixton.
Mm.
Would I go down there... And would I be prepared to have a trial? So I went down, found the gymnasium, which was on Brixton Road, Brixton. Went down there, and I'd never seen any of these guys that were around the ring. One or two fellas there in suits and ties, and they said, right, get in with it, this fella. I forget who it was now, but I'm not blessed with a good memory any longer. But I obviously must have impressed them.
Yeah, yeah.
The next thing I know, I've got bookings for Dale Martin Promotions in London.
Yeah, and I know we spoke a little bit before we hit the record button, but Max Crabtree, I know that he was obviously the main guy, the main promoter for Joint Promotions.
Right, yes.
When did you first get introduced to Max? Because he's a real character, wasn't he? And obviously one of the biggest promoters in British wrestling history.
Yes.
And obviously you spent many, many years wrestling for him.
Yes.
Under Joint Promotions and Dale Martin. When were you first introduced to Max and what sort of a relationship did you have with Max?
I had a very good relationship with Max because Max could, he could suss you out, he could watch you in the ring and he could suss you out. And he knew what you were capable of and he would have a little private talk to you and say, look, do this, John, and do that, John, and don't bother about that, and, you know, and because it's not just about, you've got to propel yourself, not, you know, as your personality, as well as your wrestling ability, and so Max, you know, I thought, well, I've just got to be a good wrestler, but
having that presence, isn't it?
It's
that
about
personality.
Presence,
yeah.
That's right. From the minute you step out of that dressing room into the walk down to the ring, you've got to be, oof.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've got to, the crowd have got to go, oof.
And did it take you a while to kind of grasp that concept and maybe not necessarily develop a character, because I know that you prided yourself on more the wrestling aspects, yes, of your performance, but did it take you a while to kind of understand how to get the feel for the audience and to understand an audience and to work to the crowd, basically?
Yes, it did.
That was a big learning curve for you?
It was, actually. It was, very much. For instance, when I first started, when the your turn to go in the ring, and the second was in front of you, I would just walk straight to the ring. Mm. And sometimes he worked in Bellevue and places like that. It was quite a long walk to the ring.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I used to just walk straight to the ring and that's it. Whereas, when you learn that there's children here hanging over the banisters, and so you don't walk straight, you say hello and you go and touch the kid and, hello, how are you doing? And
yeah.
It puts you across to the crowd.
Yeah. And you were very much a blue eye, weren't you? A baby, yeah, face, as, yeah, they say nowadays. And very popular with the audience. What was that quite fun for you to be kind of loved and revered by the fans that saw you, you know, on a week-to-week basis?
Yes, it was, actually.
Nice, yeah, to be popular.
Oh, yes, yes. I think I would have got upset if I'd have gone the other way,
yeah,
and people were booing me and calling me names, and I was always happy with the crowd liking me.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and the children, they used to touch the hands and say, hello, how are you doing? And
yeah,
things that I have photographs taken with.
Absolutely.
Them.
And I think you've carried that kind of blue eye, baby face personality through your whole career. Tell us a bit about the TV exposure, because I suppose it's one thing working to a crowd in a venue, in a hall, for example, but, you know, did you find it difficult or different in any way working to maybe a TV audience? Because, of course, World of Sport was, you know, as we said before we hit record, Johnny, that the country kind of shut down on a Saturday afternoon whenever World of Sport came on. It even beat the cup final one year.
Yeah.
But was it different or difficult working that TV audience as opposed to the live audience?
What you've got to remember when you're on television is that you're not only working to the audience that is around you, but you have got to project yourself, project your personality, project your style, whatever it is, because you've got that millions of people outside of this hall that you're working in.
Yeah.
You've got to get across to them. So that's it. You've got to project.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that, did it come with a little bit of fame as well? Did you get recognised walking down the street, going into your local, walking into the local grocery shop, for example? Did you get recognised outside of the halls?
Yeah, I did.
Tell
I
us
did.
A bit about that.
Well, I mean, in some cases, it was good. It was, you know, it was nice to walk down the street and somebody would say, hello, Johnny, how are you doing? And hey, a good match, you know. It could go the other way sometimes.
Really?
Yes, people could be a damn nuisance.
Right.
You know, so sometimes you'd slink in and out of shops and, you know, hide yourself. But most of the time, it was good. It was what you were, working for?
Sure.
Recognition, which is all part of it, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm guessing by that time, maybe we're talking maybe the 70s, you were working full time in the wrestling business.
Yes, yes.
I'm guessing there probably wasn't many years when you weren't full time.
No, that's true. I mean, I spent most of my life as a full time professional wrestler.
Mm.
Yeah, up and down the country like a yo-yo.
Mm.
I had to get rid of my cars every 2 years because there was not that much mileage on the clocks. You know, but it was a. I mean, when I left school, I started working in a factory, and I don't know, it's so boring, and this projection, this going out to the audience like I was, and it's so totally different.
Mm.
I just lapped it up, loved it.
Did you have any favourite towns or venues you liked working in for any particular reason, Johnny?
the nearest one to home, so I could get back to the nearest pub.
Oh, I completely get that. Because you wrestled quite a few times at the Royal Albert Hall, which is a revered venue in the 70s and the 80s, and unfortunately doesn't get used anymore for that type of entertainment for wrestling. It's more for the opera and singing and groups. But that must be one venue that was pretty special to perform in.
It was very much so, yes. That was like the creme de creme.
Mm.
Yes, but I mean, I liked, as long as I was wrestling and earning money, I was happy no matter where I was.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about yourself and your wrestling style now, then, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're known as the Man of a Thousand Holds. Is that right?
That's what they used to call me.
Now that sounds like the sort of thing that either Max or maybe Brian Dixon would give you. Who gave you that nickname?
Well, I forget who it was actually, but they were telling lies because I only ever knew 999 holds. No, I don't know. It just came about because my style of wrestling was not so much the attacker, but more of the escapee.
Mm.
You know,
out of holds.
Yeah, I like to lead my opponent into my advantage, if you know what I mean.
Mm, absolutely. And although a lot of people might remember Johnny Saint as the more serious, traditional British technical wrestler, mm-hmm. you did have a little bit of comedy in there as well, didn't you? I remember the Russ Abbott, and when you would put yourself into a ball. The Russ Abbott, I think it really it confused your opponents more. It probably frustrated your opponents more than anything, because you were lightning quick in, you know, just almost, I don't know, confusing your opponent. Tell us a bit about the Russ Abbott. Did you come up with the Russ Abbott?
I think I did, actually, but I've got news for you. It confused me as well. No, it was just a move that nobody else did. So, you know, you aim for recognition all the time, and so I was always trying to think of different moves and how to do them, and so that's what it was, actually.
Yeah, very, very fun. And like I say, I think you got a few pinfalls, more than a few pinfalls, using the Russ Abbott, for sure. And speaking of your technical wrestling style and your technical wrestling ability, and obviously adding in a little bit of comedy as well, quite a contrast from how you were first trained by Billy Robinson.
That's true, yeah. Billy was a real shooter. You know, shooting is what we call submission wrestling.
Mm.
And I did try it, actually, but I don't know. I just had this flair. I realised that the guys who were recognised more than the real straight true wrestlers were the guys that put a little bit of a little bit of showmanship,
a bit more character,
sure, you know, and so this is what I aimed for in my moves. I wasn't the sort of fella that would I was embarrassed if I had to talk to anybody, or, you know, so I thought, well, let's try and get some moves that nobody else does.
Were you the pioneer of any other moves that maybe stuck with the UK wrestling scene, or got used by any other professionals? Do you remember kind of what other moves you might have been famous for?
Well, I used to roll myself up in a ball, didn't I?
You did, once or twice.
Yeah, once or twice, and I'd stick my arm out, and they'd go for the arm, and that was what I wanted them to do, so... Yeah, I think I did invent a few moves, as it were, and people liked it. So I used to try and think of things whilst I was wrestling. If I do this, what's going to happen? And let's try this and see what happens from here.
Mm. And kind of skipping ahead a little bit here, but if you think about professional wrestlers nowadays in 2023. You've got some wonderful professional wrestlers out there, but a lot of them maybe have modelled themselves on the World of Sport era. Maybe some of them have modelled themselves on you. I mean, one wrestler that in particular is like Zack Sabre Jr. that is very much an escapologist and very much somebody that you know can tie their opponents up in balls. Have you had conversations with more newer talents that have been influenced by you, Johnny?
One or two, I don't get around them that much these days, so it's, you know, yeah. But I'm always willing to go to a gymnasium anywhere and spend half an hour there, and, you know, if they want to ask me any questions or anything like that, it's,
Another name from your kind of early career, I suppose, George Kidd.
Now, George, yes.
Well, we actually had a question come through from one of your fans. Now, let me just read it out here. How much training did Johnny Saint receive from the famous George Kidd? So, first of all, tell us who George Kidd was and how influential he was on you and your career.
Right, George Kidd was from Scotland. And he was a very, very. He used this when he was wrestling. This, and instead of he'd lead people. He'd lead his opponents into what he wanted them to do. Then he'd have them. You see, and he'd do all sorts of crazy things, but he was always up here. And so I had the fortune, I'm going to say, the good luck and the fortune of wrestling George Kidd a couple of times when I first started. And I realised that I was going in like a bull at a gate and George was all relaxed, and the next thing I knew, he'd got my arm up my back, and, you know, because he'd led me into it.
Yeah.
And I'd walked into it like I'd walked into a trap.
And I can see that your style eventually kind of modelled yourself a little bit on what he taught you, on the George Kidd style.
Absolutely, because it was so different.
Absolutely. And the other thing I've noticed, I've seen a lot of your matches on YouTube, and like I say, my gran, God bless her, introduced me to World of Sport back in the mid to late 80s, and I told a funny story before we went live about her shaking the walking stick at the TV, shouting at the villains, by now we'd get quite vocal. Absolutely.
Bless
but the other thing I noticed and is the pace of your matches as well. And your cardio must have been insane. And in particular, when you were up against somebody like a Johnny Kidd.
Yes.
And he's another fast, technical wrestler.
Yes.
When the two of you are in together, yourself, Johnny Saint and Johnny Kidd, that was, you really had to have kind of eyes everywhere to keep your eye on that one. Yeah. What was it like being in there with another fast-paced wrestler like Johnny Kidd?
Well, it tested you, didn't it, you know? Tested you to your limit, and you can't do something and be on top of it unless you're going to be tested.
Yeah.
You know, I used to train like a maniac. I mean, I started off as an amateur boxer, and that training, I used to go out and do road work and things like that. You know, that's why I never put any weight on. And yeah.
But you, I mean, as far as your routine was concerned for your fitness levels and your cardio, so it'd be a lot of running, and some gym work.
Yeah.
Anything else? What about dietary requirements? Was there much of a factor regarding dietary requirements when you were at your prime? Was it even a thought?
No, not for me, actually, because I was so active and I used to train like a maniac, so I could eat what I wanted. And I never seemed to put any weight on.
Yeah.
Because I would circuit train.
Yeah.
You know, with light weights and lots of reps and out running and skipping and things like that.
Yeah.